picture it. I'm about 14 or 15 years old. I've been playing trumpet for a few years at this point, doing okay. And I've been hired to play taps at the Memorial Day event that's happening at a local national cemetery. It's a very bright, sunshiny morning. I'm wearing what passes as dressed up for me at the time, which means that I've got my newest pair of blue jeans on, my cleanest sneakers, and a blue button-down Oxford shirt. In the picture I remember taken of me that day, I looked like kind of a blue smudge with a bright chrome on top because of how the sun is just shining off of my hair. There's marble headstones shining, polished everywhere, little American flags fluttering in the breeze, stuck in the grass all around. And I walk over to where people are lining up, and I guess a sergeant directs me where to stand, and there I stand in the sun, stock still for a while, trying to do my best to match the military bearing of the soldiers who are lined up over there. And then at some point, the sergeant calls an order, and that line of what is seven soldiers raise their rifles, aim them, and fire three times for the 21-gun salute. That was the part that I was the most worried about, actually. At fireworks, I always jumped at the fireworks, so I figured I was just going to hit what would pass for the ceiling when the guns went off, and I made it through. I was okay. They sound that 21-gun salute, and then from over at the side, I hear all of a sudden, "Bugler! Sound off!" And I think before he gets to the second syllable of "Bugler," I'm about 18 inches off the ground. Somehow I land okay. I don't twist an ankle or anything. I don't drop my trumpet, but a little air has been knocked out of me. I'm a little shocked, and so I think when I played taps that day, it sounded kind of like, you know, when you take the end of a balloon and you stretch it thin and you force the air out. I think it was kind of like that, but people said it was all right. People said it was okay. After the event, the sergeant walks over and hands me an envelope with a check in it, and I am, for the first time, a professional musician. And this is also the earliest memory I can think of where I know it's a memory of Memorial Day. I don't remember every moment of my life. My memories are much more abridged than that. Part of that is through simple forgetfulness, and part of it is perhaps a little bit more purposeful. I think our brains are actively remembering and actively forgetting all the time. Every night while we sleep, part of what is happening is a memory editor is coming along to reinforce some things and let go of others. For example, I have no idea where I parked the car last week when I stopped over at Target, and I am glad I don't have to hang on to that bit of information in addition to everything else. It's not possible or desirable to remember absolutely everything. The Israeli poet Yehuda Amichai wrote, "The world is filled with remembering and forgetting like sea and dry land. Sometimes memory is the solid ground we stand on. Sometimes memory is the sea that covers all things like the flood. And forgetting is the dry land that saves like Ararat." Tomorrow is Memorial Day. When we celebrate Memorial Day, or when we decide not to celebrate it, if we do that, we are making choices about who we remember. Kayla Williams served in the U.S. Army in Iraq as an Arabic linguist, and she thinks about the choices that we make on Memorial Day about who we remember. She talks about the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., that black slash on the National Mall. There are more than 58,000 names of American service people who died inscribed on that wall. In order to be one of those 58,000 names, Williams points out, you had to have died within 120 days of injuries or illnesses incurred in the combat zone. Williams says, it's the 120 days that gets me. What of those who died years later from what they were exposed to in Vietnam? And she remembers a friend of hers, Kate Hendricks Thomas, who died of breast cancer and whose doctors told her that the cause was most likely the chemicals from burn pits that she was exposed to during her time as a Marine in Iraq. Williams says, I will forever mourn and honor her too among our war dead this and every Memorial Day, whether or not her name is ever inscribed on a list of those killed. There are so many to remember, and we feel, I think, a strong value to do that remembering. And we can't and won't always remember everyone in any particular moment on any particular day. We value inclusion and diversity. We value pluralism. But we can't hold everything. So what does that mean? What does that look like? Part of what makes religions different from one another is what or who they look to as a source of authority. Part of what defines Unitarian Universalism is how we don't look to any one thing or person as the source of authority. We don't even look to a defined set of texts or people. There's always one more. There's always another. We need to always be open to new and different sources. We always are trying to remember the sacred source that we haven't discovered yet or haven't realized yet. In the Quran, God says, we made you into nations and tribes that you might know one another. We are different from one another so that we might learn from and grow to know one another. The diversity is apparently intentional, purposeful. Valuing pluralism, we Unitarian Universalists celebrate that we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology. And that value calls us to covenant to learn from one another in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. There will always be more to learn, always be another thing to remember, and that's to be celebrated. And at any one moment, we can't be looking at or listening to or in touch with everything. In the Hebrew Bible, God says, my house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples. And in the Christian Bible, the Apostle John describes a vision of the future. I looked, and there was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages. There's a lot to take in. The pluralism of the world and its people is such that no one could ever count it all. So we can't hold everything. So, well, I don't think we need to be editors. When I think of an editor, I just think of somebody snipping stuff out and letting it drop to the floor, right? I think what we need to practice is more like curation, being a curator. From the uncountable sacred pluralist reality, we curate the moment that we exist in now. To curate from a world that is uncountably sacred is to make a spiritual practice of curation. And a curate is formally an assistant to a priest or a vicar, but what they're charged to be is a spiritual guide, a pastoral presence. The word curate comes from medieval Latin, curatos, one responsible for the care of souls. The word has the same root as to cure. So to curate is to act in the care of souls, to nurture healing and wholeness of being. It's to be a guide in the direction of healing and wholeness. There's an incredibly moving poem that I thought about sharing with you today. I decided not to, partly because of how much it takes on. It is pretty full, pretty intense, and I worried that it would be a bit of an overload. But I'm still going to share something of it with you, because at the center of it is this question, I think, of curation. How much do we take in? What do we pay attention to? What do we remember? How much do we remember and memorialize? The poem is called We Live, We Live, and it's by Brandy Nalani McDougall, who is a Kanaka Maoli poet and a professor at the University of Hawaii. In the poem, she's recalling December 7th, 2023, last year, which happens to be her birthday, December 7th. And I imagine when I said December 7th, some of you thought, ah, the bombing of Pearl Harbor, right? So those two things are happening at the same time for her. So she's bringing those two things together. McDougall describes her grandfather watching the bombardment of Pearl Harbor from the roof of his dormitory. And then McDougall learns that the Palestinian poet Rifat Alarir died that day too, December 7th, 2023, in Israeli bombing. Alarir was born, lived, and died in Gaza. He taught at the Islamic University in Gaza, and he loved helping young Palestinians learn to write well in English. And he loved to pick strawberries with friends. Alarir was a few years younger than McDougall when he was killed. Yet another thing she's trying to take in. And as she's trying to take this in, her youngest child walks into the room and asks, "Is it your birthday? Are you 47 now?" And her other daughter walks in, and the two daughters start singing some songs that they've been learning in the language of their ancestors as an attempt to reclaim and remember that indigenous language. And in that moment, McDougall realizes that she's experiencing some joy with that, and then she puts it together with all the other stuff she's thinking about and feels guilt at the same time. And she asks, "What did I do to deserve such tenderness this early morning, or to live this long having heard bombs and guns fired only from a distance?" I think what she needs is some way to navigate all of this, all of these emotions. I think what she's looking for is a kind of curator, a guide, to at least give her a pathway through all of these things. And what she finds is the poetry of Rifat Alarir. She uses lines from his poems and weaves it in with her own thoughts and reflections, and I think this helps her curate her experience. It doesn't mean that her experience isn't still profoundly moving or difficult. If you go to poets.org, the website of the Academy of American Poets, you can listen to her read her poem out loud, and you can tell that she's having a hard time holding it together. But Alarir's poetry helps her. "His poetry brought so much hope to me when I most need it," McDougall says. There is so much to take in. What, something like 50,000 dead in Gaza, something like that? Oh, and as long as we're remembering, how about, what is it, something like 70,000 Ukrainians dead and 123,000 Russians? And as long as I'm remembering, there's a war going on in Sudan right now, and there's an ongoing Somali civil war, and on and on and on. I need a curator to help me through all of this. We need to be open to it all, but let us be curators with our attention on what healing and wholeness we might nurture. what healing and wholeness we might nurture in our own hearts and in the hearts of those that we have access to, the hearts that we can reach through our skills or through our connections. Let us be curators that remember and honor lives lost and broken. And let us be curators that yet move us in the direction of love and hope. So I'm going to close with two guides. One is Yehudi Amichai. I've already given you a snippet from this poem of his called In My Life, On My Life is the name of this whole poem. Here's another piece of that poem. May I rest in peace. I who am still living say, may I have peace in the rest of my life. I want peace right now while I'm still alive. I don't want to wait like that pious man who wished for one leg of the golden chair of paradise. I want a four-legged chair right here, a plain wooden chair. I want the rest of my peace now. I have lived out my life in wars of every kind, battles without and within, close combat face to face. The face is always my own, my lover face, my enemy face. Wars with the old weapons, sticks and stones, blunt axe, words, dull ripping knife, love and hate. And wars with newfangled weapons, machine gun, missile, words, landmines exploding, love and hate. I don't want to fulfill my parents' prophecy that life is war. I want peace with all my body and all my soul. Rest me in peace. And here's one of the poems by Rifat Alarir that McDougall is grateful for and finding some comfort in. It's a poem that he wrote in 2011 or so called If I Must Die. If I must die, you must live to tell my story, to sell my things, to buy a piece of cloth and some strings. Make it white with a long tail so that a child somewhere in Gaza, while looking heaven in the eye, awaiting his dad who left in a blaze and bid no one farewell, not even to his flesh, not even to himself, sees the kite. My kite you made, flying up above, and thinks for a moment an angel is there, bringing back love. If I must die, let it bring hope, let it be a tale. May we be curators of love and hope, justice and peace. Amen.